You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Scientists have been calling for a ban on light polluting mass satellite groups like Elon Musk's Starlink for some time now. Scientists are concerned that the light pollution from these so-called mega constellations make it difficult to view objects in space. I spoke to University of Auckland astrophysicist Professor Richard Easter to find out more about artificial light pollution from satellites. Mega constellations have more than doubled the number of functional satellites in low Earth orbit since early 2019. What is a satellite mega constellation?
So a satellite mega constellation is a system where instead of just having, you know, one or two satellites doing a job, you have literally hundreds or sometimes thousands or tens of thousands of satellites that are in a low orbit. So there's only a few of them overhead at any time. And they provide things like communication services or environmental monitoring or, you know, a variety of use cases.
What issues does Starlink, a mega constellation, pose for astronomers and those studying space and the skies?
So the problem with Starlink in particular is that firstly, Starlink is the biggest mega constellation that's currently being deployed. And secondly, that a lot of the Starlink satellites are relatively bright in the sky. So both just with the naked eye, you can in many cases see the Starlink satellites at night, but also the satellites move, and so they show up in astronomical images, even if they're too faint to be easily seen with the naked eye.
What other sources of artificial light at night make studying space difficult?
You know, anything that's produced by human beings, essentially, you know, that escapes into the night sky is going to make it more difficult to see the stars. So we have something called sky glow, where artificial light is, lights up the atmosphere, essentially. So, you know, if you're, you know, driving to Auckland, you know, from along State Highway 1, you can kind of see the glow in the sky before you arrive at the city, and that glow, you know, makes it harder to perform, you know, precise measurements of objects in the sky. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why big astronomical observatories are located, you know, far from sources of artificial light.
Is there a risk that large observatories wouldn't be able to function anymore with this increased artificial light at night?
The artificial light may be less so if the observatories are very remote. But I think the bigger risk in the short term is from, you know, unmanaged deployment of large constellations of satellites. And in particular with Starlink and a couple of others, you know, it's essentially unregulated. And there's been something of a land grab. You know, once you've deployed a constellation, then it's going to be harder to change the way that it's configured for regulators. And so I think there has been an effort to get satellites in place as quickly as possible to sort of stake out a slice of the space around the Earth, simply, you know, to make it harder, you know, to subsequently regulate those things in ways that would, you know, crimp their operations.
In your view, do we already have too many satellites in space in low Earth orbit?
That's a tricky one. I think we have to be really aware that things like Starlink, I mean, actually have a real utility. They're not being, you know, put there for amusement. You know, so we saw with the recent floods, for instance, that, you know, Starlink terminals, which are now, you know, widely deployed in New Zealand, a lot of remote farms will have them. And, you know, they do give really good access to the internet, which is, you know, a necessity of daily life. So, you know, communications after disasters, you know, helping people in remote areas, you know, fully participate in society. You know, Starlink serves a really useful purpose. And I think the challenge is to figure out, you know, how to deliver that benefit in ways that don't, you know, make a mess for other people. And it's certainly been the case up until now that there hasn't, you know, there is actually tight restrictions on what you put into orbit. And it's a process to get approval for, you know, even for the smaller satellite, something we've dealt with here at the University of Auckland. But it's also clear that the processes that we've got are sort of imagining, you know, one or two satellites at a time, and they haven't scaled well to something the size of Starlink.
Is it possible to retain Starlink and other satellites while improving night star viewing conditions?
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, one of the things we've seen actually is that originally Starlink, oh, you know, was, I think there were some very naive comments, you know, from Starlink and from Elon Musk in particular, saying, oh, you know, you can just do astronomy from space. And the reality is that, you know, the world's biggest telescopes are easier to build on the ground. And so, you know, we're super excited about the James Webb Space Telescope, but at the same time, we're building, you know, much bigger ground-based telescopes. And so it is possible to engineer satellites like Starlink so that they're less obtrusive. And that's obviously going to cost, you know, some money and effort that you wouldn't otherwise expend. And so part of it is making sure that, you know, whatever mitigations are in place have been applied, you know, as thoroughly as possible.
Do you think government regulation is necessary to ensure those design improvements and to improve the viewing of the night sky?
I think it's clear that there already is really intense government regulation around the use of space. So, you know, there are agreements between countries about, you know, in what circumstances things can launch, you know, who's responsible if, you know, if an object comes back to Earth and causes damage. You know, this is an area of intense, you know, legal and legislative activity. And so it's not, you know, wouldn't be something new to regulate space, but it's certainly true that the current management of the constellations, the processes we have, simply haven't kept up, and they need to be adapted quickly to address these issues.
Finally, how do decommissioned satellites get removed from space to minimize space junk?
So that's actually an interesting one. Little ones, you can just rely on them burning up in the atmosphere. Somewhat bigger ones, there's a tendency now to either move them into parking orbits so that they'll be up for a very long time. Or alternatively, they have kind of things called drag sails, you know, little kind of balloons that inflate, you know, as they're to increase the drag that they experience to quickly remove them from orbit. But actually, it's a huge problem. And it is expected that people who put large objects in space will have a plan to bring them out of orbit. I mean, and it's, you know, particularly challenging if the satellite fails, you know, and therefore isn't, you know, responsive to commands from the ground. And dealing with that problem is actually a, you know, ongoing technical challenge and a lot of activity in that area, including here in New Zealand.
That was Professor Richard Easter, astrophysicist at the University of Auckland, on the light pollution caused by Starlink and other satellite constellations.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.